We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This Edelman one, so late in the game where it gives him the tie, and it's like, you gotta be kidding me.
It's January 2015. Ravens at Patriots. This is Remember That Game, the podcast about sporting events that take you on a journey and maybe chart the path of the zeitgeist. I'm your host, Thomas Semerick, and my guest is Derek Klassen, aka QB Class, whose analysis of the quarterback position you can find at Reception Perception, Bleacher Report, The 33rd Team. We were chatting about this one in Indy during a couple of the combines now over the years. As you drift from the day, your outlook on fandom changed forever. This 2014 divisional in Foxborough, a pretty normal one in the first half. I imagine the way you watched games back then is a little different than the way you watch games today.
Definitely. First of all, thanks for having me. I think this is going to be a really fun show. But second of all, yeah, like, so it's funny, doing this job, people always ask me, you know, who are you a fan of? And it's like, well, I used to be a Ravens fan, but I just don't care anymore. And this game is important because this was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. Beforehand, I had been a Ravens fan. I was there for, I mean, not at the game, but like I was around for the Super Bowl. Obviously, I was a fan at the time. Ran around my neighborhood when they beat the Broncos like earlier in that playoff run. Like it was, so I was very fully invested. And then you get to this game, the 2014 divisional against the Patriots. So we had already won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. So like I felt like as a fan, it was like, cool, check that off the list. I'm good. And then they had this game against the Patriots. Obviously, Patriots are always going to be in the way in the AFC, but there was just something about, you know, Joe Flacco being back, who I didn't love, and then the way the game ends, and then it just being the Patriots naturally, like there was just, it was kind of this culmination of stuff where I was just like, do I really want to care anymore? And then I just didn't care anymore. And I just stopped being a fan after that game, basically.
Patriots get really deep in their bag for the stuff that could drive anyone crazy in the second half. In the first half, you have a different era of Joe Flacco. They missed the playoffs in 2013, but they had that run in 2012. He's just coming off outplaying Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh in a wild card win. You do that as a Ravens quarterback, you're in good standing usually. And then here, touchdown passes to go up 14-0 early. At this point, the previous, if you clue at the beginning of this game, that's 15 touchdown passes, zero interceptions since the run in 2012. 5-0 on that stretch. Were you much more glass half full on Flacco at this point, even with the new, you know, market setting contract?
I don't know. I think I didn't love him generally, but I think I did understand that, like, almost like Eli Manning, there was an element to him where it's like he can just get hot. I mean, shoot, he did it this year in 2023 at like 37 years old, where he just goes on this like 5-6 game run where, you know, it's not the same quality that he was playing at in those playoff runs, obviously, but like a quarterback as aggressive as Joe Flacco, who has the arm talent that he has, who like is obviously an NFL veteran, like processor and stuff like that, you can just get these runs where he's just like on a heater. And I knew that even if I didn't love paying for him. And I think you kind of started to see it for obviously the Steelers game, and then for 2.5 quarters of this game where he looked like that guy before becoming the other version of Joe Flacco for a lot of the rest of the game. But yeah.
also post Ray Lewis and post Ed Reed. What were your expectations and how did those evolve down the stretch in 2014 with that defensive coaching staff the Ravens had there too?
You knew a lot was going to have to change, especially because it's not just that Ed and Ray were like fantastic players, team leaders, all that other stuff. They were like spine of the defense, which is how like the Ravens defense currently is built. If you look at like Roquan Smith and Kyle Hamilton, like this is very much, they are guys in the very middle of the defense. And so the rest of whatever you're trying to build can kind of cascade and from around that, and they can kind of like have this effect where everything pours out to the rest of the defense. You lose two leaders like that in the very middle of the defense who are calling everything and seeing everything the way that they did. You just kind of knew it was going to be, I think, a little bit more volatile. And I think you knew that there were going to be some more growing pains with some of the guys that they were bringing in. I mean, shoot, they tried to draft Matt Elam to replace Ed Reed, which was like stylistically insane and didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. But I think you just knew that they were probably not going to be up at the same level, even though they did have a great coaching staff. And I think they did the best with what they could. And I think even some of the signings that they made to replace guys, like they brought in Darryl Smith at linebacker, who I thought was really good. He's just not Ray Lewis, which is like, it's tough. That's always going to be a tough spot when you have to replace guys of that caliber, even when you find quality players. So
Ozzie Smith does his thing. After Flacco's contract, you know, in 2014, it bumps up like almost double to around 10, 11% of the cap, and it's going to be in the double digits the rest of the way. But he does, yeah. Darryl Smith, veteran from the Jags. Will Hill, who had been good, had a good year with the Giants. They grabbed Will Hill, Darian Stewart. Darryl Smith counts like 2% against the cap. Will Hill and Darian Stewart are combining for like 2% of the cap. It's two players at safety. And PFF's grading them all out as like borderline top 10 guys at their position. How nice was it to have like a tour de force from Ozzie Smith in helping navigate the roster with the Flacco contract?
I mean, that's why Ozzie was so good, is that it just seemed like you were never going to have holes on the roster with Ozzie kind of at the helm. Like I said, it was always going to be hard to replace the star talent of Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, because I think even the best GMs, it's just hard to find guys who are literal Hall of Famers and some of the best players ever at their position. But I think Ozzie always had this quality to him where he was very good at understanding like the right low risk bets to, or like the right, you know, low cost bets to make. Darryl Smith was an interesting one because obviously Ray Lewis was fantastic, but I think especially towards the end of his career, he was more of a run defender in the box type of stuff. Darryl Smith was a coverage guy, so it kind of like changed the complexion of the defense. The same can kind of go for Will Hill, in the sense that obviously Ed Reed was like just one of the best free ranging safeties we've ever seen. Obviously he was great at everything, but that was kind of his calling card. Will Hill was like, I mean, he had range and he had good coverage ability, but his thing was like he wants to go take someone's head off, and he did that a lot. And so it was just kind of a very different feel to the defense. But I think you just always knew that like when Ozzie signed guys, there was clearly a plan, and like they weren't just piecing stuff together. I think when they had a vision to change the defense, it was a very clear vision, and I think they found the right guys to do that. And then even with Ozzie, like in the draft, I swear to God, and this is even still true today with him not necessarily calling all the shots, somewhere in the third to fifth round they're gonna find a defensive lineman who sits for a year and then he just produces 8 sacks. Like it was like Pernell McPhee is there was another one that I can't remember, but I know Za'Darius Smith was like this. Like Brandon Williams, who was a defensive tackle, was a really good piece for them for a long time in this mold. Like they just always did that. So Ozzie was just always really good at making sure there were not holes, and then you just get lucky and you find stars every now and then, whether it was, you know, obviously Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, now you have Hamilton. Like they just always found a way.
Well, as you can do, replacing arguably the two goats of their respective position right as you have to give the post Super Bowl market setting quarterback. And this is a team that comes on strong down the stretch, gives Patriots some issues in the first half. As you mentioned, Darryl Smith picks off Tom Brady right before halftime, and that turns into an Owen Daniels touchdown to go up 21-14. Kubiak, offensive coordinator here, he'd take Daniels with him to the Broncos for a Super Bowl title the following year. How crucial was it that they had Kubiak there for, you know, the final playoff run that the Ravens had with Flacco as the starter?
I think it was huge because I think I mean, Kubiak is funny in the sense, like, obviously we give so much credit to what Kyle Shanahan has done for this, like, proliferation of, like, the zone play action, you know, throw over the intermediate part of the field type of offense. Like, a lot of what Kyle knows is, like, from Kubiak, because obviously Kubiak was kind of attached to Mike Shanahan for a while and stuff like that. This 2014 offense was, like, kind of what it was supposed to look like. And then obviously Kyle was able to go on and do that with, he was able to do it with the Browns for a little bit, and then obviously the Falcons, and then now the 49ers. But, like, Kubiak was doing that with this Ravens team where Justin Forsett just randomly was, like, one of the most productive backs in the league. And he was awesome because it was just like, yeah, we're going to run zone. We're going to be really good at it. And we're going to find this running back who's just has pretty good vision, and he knows how to get downhill. And they were really, really good at that. And Flacco, I think it kind of simplified the passing offense for him. And I think, because he was never a quarterback who was actually, like, a top eight, I can do everything, make every throw type of guy, I think he kind of benefited a lot from this structure, especially because at the time it wasn't as prevalent as it was today, where everyone has all the answers and stuff like that. This at the time was a little bit like the newfangled thing. And so I think having a guy like Kubiak to come in and kind of instill that was just insanely, it did a lot for this team after, like you said, 2013, they don't make the playoffs. And it was like, oh, did we really pay this guy? Like, this is what we have at quarterback now. But I think Kubiak kind of, you know, reminded you that you can get something out of a guy like Flacco.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, like Daryl Smith, they get Justin Forsett from the Jags, and he's ripping off 5 yards a pop, kicks off scoring for Baltimore in the second half, makes it 28-14. Patriots had come back from a 14-0 deficit in the first half. As we'll see, they'll start to do it again. I saw this game being called the double comeback. What do you think about that moniker?
I mean, I don't know, man. I only remember the very end, like the pick. It, like, in terms of, like, the narrative in my mind, it is not the double comeback. It is literally just, like, Joe Flacco throwing that pick. Like, that's the narrative to me in my head. So
Christopher Nolan just won Best Director. So we'll do some stuff with time continuity and our narrative structure here. This game ends with Joe Flacco rearing his arm back, just like in 2012 in the divisional on the road. I'm going to find Jacoby Jones behind the defense. Post-game, Daron Harmon said he knew once Joe Flacco turned that way exactly what he's going to do. And Harmon's there for the pick. So, but we'll get back to some of the more frustrating ways Belichick got deep in his bag in the second half. But we'll start with that end point for Flacco there. Did it seem like that was the beginning of the end in Baltimore? And how weird was it to see with him with the Browns?
It was a little bit weird. I think the thing with Flacco is, like, that did a little bit feel like, not necessarily that this was going to be, you know, the beginning of the end necessarily, but I think you did feel like, oh, okay, well, this heater is coming to an end. How are we going to, like, you know, develop the rest of the team from here? And, like, what's really going to be our identity? And then, you know, obviously from there, they never really did figure it out, at least to, like, the same degree, to get back to those same heights. So that part was frustrating. I think the part about that interception that really, really bugs me the most is the Patriots take the lead before this by throwing, like, a deep touchdown down the left sideline right in front of the left pylon. And then Flacco immediately comes back and throws a deep pick down the left sideline in front of the left pylon. And it's just like, you're seeing literally the same moment, except for Tom Brady, it works. And for Joe Flacco, it doesn't. And that to me was just like why it was so painfully frustrating. It just kind of reminded you like, okay, 2012 was cool and we got, you know, lucky in a sense, but this other guy on the other sideline is just better and different and he's probably not going anywhere. And it was just kind of, it was a humbling reminder.
Leading up to that humbling reminder, and while the Ravens are still up 28-14, Patriots get the ball back, seemingly reeling. It's been 10 years since they'd won a Super Bowl title. Much different stage of the Brady Belichick legacy. There had been a different AFC participant in the Super Bowl each year that decade leading up, the Steelers, Patriots, Ravens, and Broncos in 2013. So did you feel like the Ravens were in that mix there to be the domineering AFC team in what seemed like more of a derby than it would later in the decade?
I mean, I think it's either us or, you know, I don't hate to say it as much now because I'm not a fan, but Pittsburgh. Like, I think Pittsburgh, it's one of the two. You kind of just pick your poison. Like you said, a couple other teams had their moments, but really the only other couple teams were just like whichever one Peyton Manning was on. So yeah. It's not really so much a team. It's like, it's just Peyton, which like, yeah, of course. But other than that, I think it's just the Steelers or the Ravens. I think the Ravens, like defense specifically, tended to give Tom a lot of issues. I just think for a lot of that time, especially post 2012, the offense was just never quite there to like actually threaten New England the same way. It felt like 2012 was kind of like that rare moment where it all came together. Whereas like the Steelers for a minute there, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger was still playing at a very high level. Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, like they were an insane offense for a little bit. And you actually did walk into those Steelers-Patriots games like, oh, if this goes to a shootout, I mean, the Steelers can win it. They really never ended up doing it, but you at least felt better about it, I think, than for good stretches with the Ravens there. So I would say it had to be either us or Pittsburgh for sure.
You go into this one 2-1 against the Ravens in the playoffs, 2-1 in New England under Harbaugh and Flacco. Those two wins just kind of stomping the Pats. That one loss, 2011 AFC title, the last millisecond, the pass from Flacco to Lee Evans gets punched out by Sterling Moore. So I imagine you feel more like the Patriots felt more like prey than they would later on. Do you have different expectations going into the game, or did the not having Ed Reed anymore factor into how much you felt like you potentially could own the Patriots?
I think that's what it is. It's like, actually, this was probably the last time I felt really good about the offense being able to go blow for blow with New England. Obviously, they did in that game. They were a really good offense. That you're really efficient. But it did feel different being like, okay, there's no Ray Lewis. There's no Ed Reed. This was kind of Tom's kryptonite in a sense. And now we don't have that. And that to me was, I think, the scariest part. And I think probably a big reason that they were able to mount, I guess, you know, the double comebacks. But like the way that they were able to do it the way that they did is just, I think even just having Ed Reed there, even if he was only 80% of, you know, maybe what he was at his peak, probably is enough to swing this game specifically against Tom Brady.
Brady and Belichick famously in awe of Ed Reed. Could be heads of the Ed Reed fan club even. But it's hard to replace greatness. And they did the best they could with a pretty good staff there. Defense coordinator Dean Pease. They also had Steve Spagnuolo and Mike McDonald on staff, who we'd see a bit of this past year in the playoffs. But Patriots down 14, dropped some stuff that they maybe didn't expect. A tight end who was viewed perhaps by the Ravens defense as an ineligible receiver, but was eligible. Michael Manui gets it's only like a 15-yard catch or so, but Harbaugh comes on the field to be like, what is going on? This play has never been seen in NFL history. This has to be penalty. The penalty ends up being on Harbaugh. What does that moment do for you mentally as far as how likely you are to put this away?
I mean, that is when you remember that Belichick is just like not dead until he's dead. Because, like, obviously the Ravens started out that game fantastic, 14-0. We knew our offense was good, so it was like, okay, we can keep putting up points. It's just a matter of, you know, how many can we stop them. But they pull that off, and then there are also, in the first half, a handful of throws to Gronk where Gronk is just, like, you know, the best player on the field. And it's just, like, this creeps into your mind where you're just like, man, they can still do this if we kind of give them a chance. And then, obviously, I think just the frustration of a play like that, the you know, quote, ineligible tight end thing where they thought he was, that type of stuff, just, it's Belichick, man. That's how he irks at you, is he just stupid stuff like that where he just knows he's going to get into your head.
And then they done do it again. The next drive, they score that drive, yet to Gronk. The next drive, bubble screen to Julian Edelman, like they've been doing all year, except this time the Kent State quarterback hits Amendola, 51-yard touchdown, tie game going into the fourth like that. These are the two most annoying New England Patriots plays you've ever seen in your life.
100%. And honestly, the Edelman one is frustrating specifically because it ties the game. Like, I think if this was earlier in the game and it was just like, okay, they need to breathe life into something, they need to get it going, like kind of like the first one obviously was annoying, the one to Huemanui, but it was a little bit earlier, so it was like, okay, you know, whatever. This Edelman one, so late in the game where it gives them the tie, and it's like, you gotta be kidding me, dude, like of all moments. And so to add that on top of the frustration from the other trick play, some of the inevitability of Gronk, it just kind of felt like they had finally gotten into Baltimore's head with that play.
The receiving core was at that point a little earlier in Edelman's career, a little earlier in Danny Amendola's career. These weren't as big of, you know, this is before playoff Danny or Edelman as the Super Bowl MVP. And then they have Brandon LaFell. Like, are they going to be able to rely on him to make a big play late in the game? So it seemed like, just don't let Gronk beat us. But Gronk catches 7 passes for 108 yards and a touchdown.
Gronk will beat you. Like, that was why the beginning of the you know, even when the Ravens were up 14-0, they started stringing those Gronk catches together, and I really think that was when it was like, he's just gonna do it, man. Like, Gronk, because especially too, at the time, obviously this was like peak Gronk, he was incredible, but Gronk to me has always been a player where it's like, I think if he had a fully healthy career, we wouldn't even think of him as the greatest tight end of all time. We would think of him as one of, like, the four best players of all time. And you saw in that moment just, like, how dominant and how much, like, gravity he can pull as a player. It just felt like he was going to win the game.
Yeah, and in a way, he did. He helps you get single coverage on Brandon LaFell. No safety help over top like Flacco would face later on that throw down to the left pylon, as you mentioned. That puts Patriots up 35-31. That's following a Justin Tucker field goal. But, I mean, you see Travis Kelce's done a lot of great stuff in the ensuing years, but 2014 Gronk, is that the peak of tight end play all time for you?
Yeah, maybe not that year specifically. I think he had like a decent little stretch there. But yeah, that like run of Gronk, like from, I guess, like right around this time up until like the Rams Super Bowl when they beat him in 2018 or whatever that was, that to me is probably just the most dominant stretch of tight end play I've ever seen. And obviously, like, you know, I was around for a lot of Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, like obviously Travis Kelce is fantastic, but Gronk to me was just a different, there was just a gravity about him that I think was completely terrifying, because it's not just that he was like, you know, a good athlete, a good route runner for that size, all that jazz. He was obviously a fantastic blocker, but there was like, I'm trying to even think of the word. There was just like a demoralizing nature to having to tackle him. Like the thought of having to bring that man down was completely horrifying in a way that I just don't know if I've ever seen from another tight end or really that many other players, period. And so he, to me, that's just why he was a different kind of animal to me.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you would do if you had an extra hour in your day? Go for a run, take a nap, hang out with friends, read a book. So many options. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The best way to squeeze some more into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make that a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. I began therapy in early 2023, and I found it has helped me set boundaries, learn positive coping skills, and add a lot to my day to day, and some of that being prioritization, to be able to focus on what is important at that time rather than trying to focus on everything that is going on in my life at that exact moment, which leads you to not be in the moment because you're thinking about stuff that is out of your control. And having that awareness has helped me throughout my day today. And that is something that I have found to be very positive for me. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/rotoviz today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/rotoviz.
I mean, you have a pretty good tight end, and I mean, you could, who's done, who's had some good games, and Dennis Pitta has had been good in key moments. But then you see what the other side has at tight end. It's got to be frustrating.
That, I mean, that's the thing, because that was too, like, with Brady throwing down the left sideline to score and then Flacco throwing the pick. It gave you the same feeling where it's like, man, our thing is cool, but it's not that. And even like Harbaugh, like, dude, I love Harbaugh. I think he's one of the best coaches of this generation. But this was also like peak Belichick. And you're still reminded, like, man, they're just a little bit better at everything, like, no matter what you do. And so that was, I think every part of that game kind of felt that way. And Gronk, to me, was like kind of the pinnacle of it. Yeah.
Between this and realizing what you're probably going to get from Matt Elam in the first draft after the Super Bowl kind of broke you a bit as a fan, does it ever come to mind that Travis Kelce was 31 picks after?
Not really until you said it. But now that you said it, I think if I would have like, because I think by the time Travis Kelce broke out, I was already kind of like mentally gone, so I guess that's just never something that registered. But now in hindsight, yes, that does piss me off a little bit.
Okay, yeah, that's, this show is in part sick games. In retrospect, would you have rather done the unthinkable, not given Flacco the market setting contract, and instead drafted Geno Smith six, or I think it's like seven picks later?
I mean, like, in theory, I actually didn't love Geno Smith that year, even though I love him now, which is very funny. So I don't know if I even would have thought that was the time. I think that was kind of what was complicating about the contract at the time, was it was like, okay, I don't know if he's worth this kind of money. But one, you win a Super Bowl with a guy, you're probably just going to pay him anyway. And I think I internalized that. But also, too, it was like, you look at the quarterback class and it was like, first round pick on Geno Smith, EJ Manuel. I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be any better. So I think it was just like almost a dooming scenario.
Geno, it may have had to take the same amount of time to.
Right. You just don't know. Yeah.
But yeah, like heading into before Geno ended up on the Seahawks, you look at the draft and you're like zero starting quarterbacks here. But can I interest you? So yeah, you talk about Justin Forsett, ripping off 5.5 yards behind Marshall Yanda and Semele. But Matt Burke at center had just retired after that Super Bowl. Can I interest you one pick ahead of Matt Elam in Travis Frederick?
Okay, that would have been fantastic. And especially too, because I think, so actually, I think at the time they had Jeremy Zutaw at center, who actually for the Kubiak stuff was awesome, because he was a really good athlete. Like lateral quickness was fantastic. He was really good at all the zone running stuff. But it was like, I think in that offense, there are certain players who can slot in where it's just like, you're probably not a starter on like 20 other teams. But for what we do specifically, this can work. Zutaw was kind of along those lines. But Frederick would have been obviously a very different animal, and I think probably would have changed fundamentally what the Ravens offense was allowed to do for the next however many years, because Frederick, it's not even just that he's incredibly talented, incredibly athletic, and can like do any run scheme, any pass scheme, all that other stuff. Frederick is really, really, really good at doing like the pre-snap, you know, understanding how to set protections. Like him and Dak, when they were at their peak, were probably the coolest thing I've ever seen outside of Tom Brady or Peyton Manning at that. And so I think that would have been a lot better than the Elam thing. That's for sure.
So yeah, like post Flacco winning a Super Bowl, one of the great playoff runs by quarterback we've ever seen, post Ed Reed, maybe the greatest free safety we've ever seen, but is on the tail end, letting him walk to Houston, given the quarterback class and everything there. Matt Elam, 32, logically, it seems like you're kind of actually behind that.
I mean, Elam was funny, actually, because, okay, first of all, I didn't think he made any sense to replace Ed Reed, because in my mind, Ed Reed is obviously like a center fielder. Elam can run, but like what made Elam a player was like being an enforcer and like coming downhill and hitting people. And so to me, like fundamentally, it just didn't make a lot of sense. Like that one-to-one replacement. The other thing about Elam is I was also a Gators fan. Okay. And I'd seen a lot of Matt Elam. And I feel like when you're a fan of a college team and there are like these high-end prospects that are going to the NFL, you are either like way inflating them and you think they're just the best thing that's ever happened to the NFL, or you know that they're not that good and they're being propped up more than they should be. I was kind of the latter with Matt Elam. I was like, dude, he's really cool. He's really fun. He's part of this like attitude era Gators where we're just hitting people and getting personal fouls and all this other jazz. But I just didn't know if he was like a consistent NFL player. And so when they drafted him, I was like, it's cool to have him on the team, but I just don't know if this is what, I don't know if this is the thing that they think it is.
Yeah. Ravens come out of about as tough of a Super Bowl hangover as you can, given where things were going to go contractually. And also with the veteran players making their way toward retirement. And then you end up having a pretty good team here in 2014. Is there anything you think is left on the table as far as what could have been done, as the Ravens kind of have that, not bad, but like a little bit lost in the wilderness mid-2010s period? Is there anything that could have really changed that?
I think the way they handled receiver for like a decade was really bad. There was this stretch there where I even did like this little project about it because it pissed me off, but they just kept taking tall guys who could run and just could not play the position. Like Tandon Doss is kind of like the epitome of it, but they just kept doing it over and over and over again with these guys who were big and just could not play the game. And so they just ended up with a bunch of like wide receiver threes who just got stuck playing in the offense. And when you didn't have Kubiak and then obviously Steve Smith being your number one receiver to like paper over some of that, I think as soon as all of that stuff went away, it was just like, oh, Joe Flacco is throwing to a bunch of number threes. That's not good. So obviously Torrey Smith there for a little bit was pretty good, but like outside of him, I think they really struggled to figure out what they wanted to do at the position. And like the only thing they ever really got at the position was like band-aid free agent guys like Michael Crabtree for a little bit. Obviously I mentioned Steve Smith right before they really had this like big time drought. It just never felt like they could draft a guy who was like a super impact player. And I think that was probably their biggest downfall over that period, because we knew Joe Flacco was never going to be the engine. He kind of had to be like helped along by the pieces. And I think they just never found the right pieces.
Steve Smith in that game beats Darrell Revis for a touchdown. They had a little rivalry that Revis had the better end of, but not on that play there. And they go from Anquan in the Super Bowl run to Steve Smith. How's it just felt like emotionally in the, I guess you're not as emotionally vested there, but what's it like watching the Ravens on their hunt for another guy with that dog?
I mean, I think they need it just because like that's the culture, right? Like that's who the Ravens are, is like we're gonna be mean, we're gonna hit you, we're gonna be smarter and tougher than you. And I think it's funny that obviously when Anquan left, they immediately go for Steve Smith. And yep. Then even at a certain point, they try to get Michael Crabtree, who like isn't quite at the same level, like in that mold. But I mean, he was a big guy who had like catch radius. So like it kind of fit in that sense. I think now it's funny that they've like almost gone the complete opposite way, where they've got like Zay Flowers, who's 180 pounds soaking wet. They go for Odell Beckham, who is obviously much more of like a finesse, like route runner type receiver. Rashad Bateman is a little bit more of like a standard X receiver, but he's kind of skinny for the position. Like, he's not really like a, you know, bully you tough guy. He's a little bit more of like, he's just got juice. So it's funny that they almost just like gave up on trying to have like the one dog and then just get a bunch of like tall guys who can run and are just like, you know what? We're just going to get a bunch of skinny guys who are explosive and we're going to see if that'll work. And truthfully, it's the best that they've done at the position in a very long time. So maybe that was all they needed to do.
This has been another episode of Remember That Game. Please rate, review, subscribe, and check out more episodes.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big.